Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
The Satanic Panic swept the country in the 1980s, in which claims of widespread ritual abuse and occult conspiracies were treated as real threats. Targets were wrongfully convicted, children were taken from marginalized homes, all while much of the evidence seemed to stem from one man's written account. He rose to fame, claiming he freed himself from the Illuminati's satanic control, but what if it was all a crock of lies? This week's episode is Mike Warnke, Fake Satanist, Part 1.
Up in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood. I'm gonna kill you.
Oh man, I have been down a rabbit hole of Mike Warnke's comedy, which we will get to later in the episode. I have some tagged of some things we're going to share. So you might know him as the former comedian Mike Warnke, maybe not even as the fake Satanist. It depends on when he came into your life.
Yeah, if he came on a stage at your church with his long flowing white mullet and earrings and his fun belt buckle, we'll, like Christy said, we'll play some clips.
Cargo, but also, fisherman cargo vest half the time.
This book was like $2. I found this book. It's called The Satan Seller, which we'll talk about. And it's a little, you know, this is a first edition. I'm not trying to brag, but
it was like, you need that thing signed.
$2. And I thought, this is wild. It said a former Satanist high priest reveals the demonic forces behind the fastest growing and most deadly occult religion in the world. And being that it was from 1972, I thought maybe I'd have heard something about this. And man, I'm so excited that we're doing these two episodes because it's so insidious what he did.
Still truly is. The whole satanic panic thing of the 80s, which Mike pretty much kicked off, is such a wild topic, and we've talked about covering it in various ways before. I think we should still cover like the main case from the daycare that was just so crazy back then. I remember watching a Lifetime movie when I was in the 80s about it and just being like, there were underground satanic lairs where the teachers were taking them and and the kids were testifying. It was truly sweeping the nation and all made up.
Pretty much. I mean, between that and the book Michelle Remembers and all of it came about in the 80s. But what I think a lot of us did not realize then and into the 90s is it kept being, you know, Dana Carvey's famous Satan, you know, the church lady was not far off because they just started blaming Satan for everything. And you kind of wonder, like, what was the seed of all this? How did it all start? And it turns out it was this book I got for $2.
First edition. How do you feel if you know your first edition is going for $2?
Yeah, I don't know that he's achieved the career that maybe he would have wanted to, but I mean, fuck it, dude. It's a good gig if you can get it, swindling. So
yeah. Yeah.
Stick to it.
I mean, for others, it's, you know, can be traumatizing and you feel like you've been lied to and gaslit. Oh, but for him, he was making some money and selling out crowds for a long time.
He was fucking sucking and yucking on stage, yucking it up. We'll also learn this man.
Oh, well, I know what I'm getting everybody for Christmas. Custom t-shirts.
Yeah, fucking sucking and yucking. The Mike Warnke story. So I really am thoroughly excited. And we can use a little, this is also going to be funny throughout, because at the end of the day, you know, hopefully he didn't do anything physically to anybody, so we can laugh a little bit about this guy. And he's a comedian. He wants us to laugh, you know.
Oh, that's what
all
yeah.
of us, all he's of us a fellow comedians
comedian.
Want.
Comedian. Yeah.
To the, oh, think yes. that we have the same job as Mike Warnke is a lot to swallow. It's a lot to consider. Truly.
I believe I used quotes when I said comedy special that I yeah, was watching.
Yeah, he's a man. We've got a lot to chat about with him. And not only today, but you can also tune in tomorrow. We're going to drop an interview with Sarah Marshall, who has hosted an entire. Well, first of all, you know her from You're Wrong About, the phenomenal show that many times when we've covered something, her name comes up as like, mm-hmm. oh, my gosh, you've got to check out the You're Wrong About. So she's doing a limited series called The Devil You Know that covers the Satanic Panic, some of the flashpoints of it. And we got to chat with her. So our conversation about, we touch a little bit on Mike Warnke, but mostly about the overarching Satanic Panic that can kind of set you up before part two. Because today we're going to talk about Mike's background and his book.
His first edition $2 book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I bet you could get him to sign that. 1,000%.
The way I'm going to show up the next time I see Bishop Mike Warnke is within an hour's drive of me, 100% I'll go. Yeah. 100%.
And he's like, wait a minute. Are you the one that put out that podcast about me?
You're that bitch from YouTube.
You got to wear a mustache.
Exactly. I'm going to wear one of those full, like the silicone rubber mask yeah. that you can put on that you really can't tell it's a person under it. Like
yeah, wear one of those.
Yeah. And be like, hi, I'm just here. And he's like, the Illuminati's finally come for me.
If you show up to Mike Warnke, like, fan meetup in one of those things, you would be the scariest person there.
Like, this is just what I want. I need to get a mask of him with a wig of him and be like, I'm the true Satan seller. I wrote this book.
I've been reincarnated. Oh, we'll and out. I've taken the form of Mike Warnke. Well,
we'll freak him out.
I think we just dive right in.
Let's go, Mike. Let's bring it on.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Michael Alfred Mike Warnke is the author of the infamous 1972 book, The Satan Seller, a shocking firsthand expose of America's hidden occult network, Hidden Occult Underground. In it, Warnke claimed he had once been a high-ranking satanic priest involved in gruesome rituals and heinous crimes. Evangelical readers and church leaders embraced his testimony immediately, treating Warnke as an authoritative voice on Satanism. This supposed high priest of Satanism was born on November 19, 1946, in Evansville, Indiana. Warnke's family moved to Tennessee when he was just 5 years old, where his father opened a truck stop. Warnke later claimed his parents were alcoholics and his father sold bootleg booze. Subsequent investigations found the bootlegging claim untrue, though his parents both struggled with substance abuse.
You kind of see that even in the early days of his childhood, he couldn't just go with the facts. He had to turn it up a notch. Like, my yeah. dad ran a truck stop, and in it, he was bootlegging liquor. And it's like they interviewed sheriffs from the time that were like, some places were, but his was not. And he sort of just made it up out yeah. of whole cloth.
And I always pause it when people do that, especially children. It's like, well, there's something going on in their life that they are trying to mask, or their world they feel like is so boring that no one is going to appreciate it or be interested. They won't be able to make friends. So they kind of have to create these outlandish stories to get people to be interested in them.
Mm-hmm. Or like their parents really weren't interested in them. So it's like, well, he couldn't be because he was this big criminal and he was running an enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it's almost Buford Pusserish in that it's like giving a legendary status to your dad already. Like, it wasn't like, I just had this loser truck stop running dad. It was like, well, he wasn't around because he was doing major yeah. crimes, and get that tangential
credit almost.
Yeah.
But, and first of all, also shout out to Mike Hertenstein and John Trott, who wrote Selling Satan, which was a good reference for all of the real things that happened. They're journalists, so they went and just looked up everything. So anytime we're like, Mike said this, but reality was this, probably Hertenstein and Trott are the reason why we know that reality is what it was.
Well, kudos to you two men. Warnke's early childhood was marked by two major family losses. In 1955, when he was 9 years old, his mother died in a car accident. 3 years later, in 1958, his father died of natural causes. Warnke then lived with various relatives, spending time in Tennessee and later in California.
It also made me wonder if he just didn't remember things well, or if it is just this like fantasy he wished he had. Cause he's like, when mother was in the car accident, this whole time when she was injured, you know, I had these interactions with her and we talked, and then she passed away. He claimed to have interacted with her for like months. She just died in the accident.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, you wish that you would have had those interactions.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you're that young, who knows? It's, vivid imagination. Maybe he thought he was, you know, kind of talking to her in his own way. But regardless, to lose both your parents so young and so close together will shape your world, whether you want it to or not. It's going to change how things go.
And it was an issue of like the family in Tennessee maybe didn't want him to stay. So then it's like, well, your dad's sister lives in California. So now you're a kid that's like being chucked around the country, like unwanted almost too. So it probably does do something to your sense of selfhood.
During his school years, Warnke attended Rim of the World High School in Lake Arrowhead, California, where he graduated in 1965. In his writings, Warnke painted a wild picture of his teen life.
A world of freedom, lots of girls, and plenty of booze.
However, classmates later said that they had never seen him drink, use drugs, or behave like the rebellious figure he portrayed. One classmate was quoted as saying,
"Oh, Warnke was a nerd. I mean, he had a weird sense of humor, and I liked him for that. We locked him in a locker once. It was a small locker."
So he was a small guy.
I guess so, or big guy in a small locker. Either way, but that's what people would remember and be like, oh yeah, that funny weird guy, that funny weird nerd guy that we liked. But
you're like, not the party animal, Mike Warnke, the drugger, the drinker, the ladies man. They're like, we're not talking about the same Mike Warnke. So again, he's kind of creating a persona he wish existed.
It makes me think of when George got a hold of that Yankees jacket and was driving Frank's car around. And she's like, is this your fiber drink? He's like, throw it away. Who cares? And he's like, I'm a bad boy. It's like, I don't think you are, though. You're a bad friend. You're a bad liar. You're a bad son.
After high school, Warnke enrolled briefly at San Bernardino Valley College. According to his later account, he was taking drugs like marijuana and speed upon enrollment in college. He also simply stated that it was during this time,
I was introduced to a small group of Satanists
in a casual way through friends on campus. At first, they seemed cool and anti-establishment. Soon, they were appearing in his room and disappearing just as mysteriously. He believed it proved their immense power. Warnke was invited to a small gathering with candles and symbolic objects where the group began chanting, formally mocking God, and pledging their allegiance to Satan.
Everybody knows your first week on campus, you're like, do I join this group or that group or the Satanists?
Yeah. I mean, I dropped out of Rush, but I may have stuck around if just 666 had been one of the sororities.
They're like, it's Sigma, Sigma, Sigma. Like, what does that stand for? Don't worry about it. Yeah, if there was going to be chanting and like candles and whatnot, I might have been, you know, it did cost like $7,000 to pledge the sororities my freshman year. And I was like, I don't have $7,000, but I could have scraped it together, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. Or perhaps you just were looking at the wrong house.
Yeah, I was like, Satan's a sorority. Exactly. I should have found a sisterhood.
They're like, "What? So where's your house?" We don't have a house. We practice in the graveyard every night at midnight to 3 a.m.
So you're telling me my dues go to maintenance of a graveyard? Absolutely, I'm in. Okay. Take it. Take my money.
Soon, Warnke was attending regular meetings, helping with setup, and was given a lot of attention by the group. He believed they were attracted to him by his childhood loss, open-mindedness, and willingness to listen. Warnke's involvement with the group led him to experimenting heavily with drugs, growing his hair and nails long, and drifting into an underground world of ritual practices. They gave him his satanic name, Judas Iscariot, and made him sign a book in blood. By learning spells, amassing knowledge of the secret practices, and recruiting others, Warnke rose through the ranks, eventually becoming a
high priest and master counselor,
presiding over rituals for a coven he claimed outnumbered around 1,500 members. All this while he was attending college full time.
Yeah, he said he took it from 500 to 1,500 members.
That's a 300% increase.
It was a huge increase. But after he got promoted, I had flipped the page open to this earlier. He got back to his apartment and the guy drove him from the satanic meeting and said, you know, now that you've been promoted, we're going to give you this car, give you this driver to chauffeur you around, and you won't have to worry about anything. And Mike said he went up to his apartment and inside it had been completely refurnished, that the drapes had been very thin, ugly drapes, and that when he got in there, there were these like beautiful, thick curtains. There was this leather sofa, that he had done a ritual, that there was wishing smoke. And he's like, I guess they found all my wishes from the wishing smoke because they did the apartment just like I wanted. And there were two women, one of whom was named Lorraine, who were in there. He called them chicks and they were like, we're just here for you, whatever you want, like we're your slaves, like we'll do anything. So he was like, they kept the place tidy, they kept food in the place, like when people would come over to have official business, they would help set up like a little office area. And they even took him to the electronics store and he's like, I picked out a stereo that had everything. I'm telling you everything on this stereo. And then he's like, the manager told me, take whatever you want, Mike. It's taken care of, because the manager was in on it too. So I'm like, the manager of the Radio Shack, we're to assume, is so much in the Illuminati Satanism that he's giving stereos away.
Everybody knows Radio Shack was just a front for Illuminati Satan meetings.
Absolutely. Easily. And they go, you know, we'll give you as much alcohol as you can drink, whatever you want. I'm like, it's like an all-inclusive resort that follows you around, but the devil.
But it's the devil.
But the devil.
Oh, man. The wishing smoke. Wishing smoke. There's the wishing tree on a show my kids used to watch. And now I'm going to have to call it wishing smoke.
Nice.
I was thinking of the song,
the wishing boot from SNL, but also
Yeah.
The wishing boot.
Wishing boot.
It knows you. It knows you. Sinister Hood will be right back.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are full of traditions. Some are passed down, some are brand new, and some we're still figuring out. Maybe it's baking your great aunt's sweet potato pie or finally perfecting that hot chocolate recipe with your kids. But with all the joy, this time of year can also feel chaotic and even isolating, especially if you're navigating it without those familiar rituals or with too many piled on.
That is where therapy can really come in. Making it part of your routine, even just during the holidays, can help you stay grounded, can help you carve out a moment for yourself and reflect on what actually matters to you. Whether you're holding on to old traditions or making your own new ones from scratch, it's a great way to support your mental health while everything is swirling around you.
BetterHelp has helped over 5 million people find licensed therapists who listen and support real progress. They make it easy to get started by matching you with a therapist based on your needs and preferences, so you can focus on your goals, not the guesswork. And if the fit isn't right, you can switch anytime.
I'm so grateful for my BetterHelp therapist. I see her every Monday morning, and it's such a good way to start my week. It's also a great way to anchor myself during the holiday time. I'm going through it with a little bit of grief right now. I think it's not unusual missing people that aren't here, and I feel like being able to talk with somebody about ways that I can honor them or ways that I can deal with the feelings I have in a healthy way has been immeasurably helpful. And thank you, Nikki. I love you.
Don't say
I love you. Oh God. No, she's just kidding. She doesn't listen. It'll be fine.
Well, but we do love our therapist.
We do love our therapist.
That's okay.
Yeah, we do. I didn't want her to think I was too thirsty, you know, but she knows. She knows.
This December, start a new tradition by taking care of you. Our listeners get 10% off at betterhelp.com/sinister. That's betterhelp.com/sinister. Warnke's foray into Satanism included heroin trafficking, ritual sex, demonic summoning, the sexual assault of a kidnapped woman during a ceremony, and even alleged attempt by fellow Satanists to murder him through a staged overdose, supposedly because Warnke had become too powerful. He also said he was personally acquainted with Charles Manson and held a secret strategy meeting with Anton LaVey.
Yeah, he said after the OD and they sort of fell out and that he came back and his whole apartment wasn't decorated anymore. I'm like, just as fast, just as quick as it happens, it goes away. But yeah, when he talks about the rituals, he's like, I got members to eat their own fingers. We drank blood, you know, everything you can imagine, you know, involving, you know, all that. But he also on top of it would say, well, even though I was master counselor and I knew there were the brotherhood was above me, I wasn't really sure what it was. And they didn't really tell me, but they told me that I could do the people that were his at his level told me I could do any ritual I want. And so they put a bunch of books in my house and I studied them all. And you have to be really careful because one time when I was doing a ritual, these two Satanists stepped on the wrong part of the pentagram and their toes were touching the wrong line and they were stomped on. A demon stomped them flat, like as if a human was stomped under an elephant's foot. But the demon stomped them merely because they stepped on the wrong part of the pentagram. So he's like, I had to study the books and be really careful.
Yeah, you got to be thorough. What are you? You don't want to get smushed. How embarrassing. You're trying to conduct a ritual and all of a sudden you just get flattened.
Yes, you get smashed down. But he said, you know, I had my job at this hamburger place at the time. And you're like, I'm sorry, what now? I thought that the Satanist
gave you. Why do you need to work, bro?
He's like, it was a cover story. But then they fired him because he OD'd on heroin and he didn't come to work.
Well, yeah.
Everybody, I mean, has standards.
That'll do it.
Everybody had standards.
Yeah. I mean, even the Satanists have standards.
Yeah.
McDonald's managers have standards or wherever he was working. Warnke has standards. And he has his imagination where he lives 99% of the time, I think.
I think so. It's like that kid that you're like, where you were out playing in the backyard. What happened? And they're like, a portal opened. And then a witch came out. And you're like, okay. What did you do under the? I know you did something under the storage building. What were you doing under there? I don't think it was the portal. And it was like, nothing. Fucking around.
That was Warnke all the time.
Yeah.
Warnke later wrote of a trip to Salem in 1966, where he met with the higher leaders of the Satanist movement. He learned the group was connected with the Illuminati. And, more horrifying, he learned,
the global conspiracy buffs were right after all. Lee Harvey Oswald, James Earl Ray, Sirhan, they were the pawns of a much bigger plot.
Meaning the Illuminati had killed JFK, MLK, and RFK.
And I should point out that his meeting was in 1966. All those people got murdered in like 1968, 69.
So. He was a visionary, Heather.
Why didn't you save MLK?
Saw the future. Yeah, that's on him. Why he didn't do something to change. But it's like the butterfly effect. If he had changed one thing, who else knows what would have changed?
No, it's true.
Maybe he could have fixed the whole fucking thing and we wouldn't be where we are today if he'd saved MLK.
Get in there and fucking pull some strings if it's a puppet. But he said Hitler and Stalin were puppets of the Illuminati. The phrasing around the brotherhood, the Illuminati, echoed in the same language that was in like horror films in the 60s about this kind of stuff. But he described these wealthy homes and nice neighborhoods and how it was a lot of like rich connected, kind of like the manager at the electronics store. Basically, the implication being you never know when they might be, you know, in charge.
They are.
Yeah, it could be anyone.
Could be the manager at the Radio Shack. If I get invited into the Illuminati and I'm also working retail.
God damn it.
I need to pick a lane because I can't dedicate my life to both of those. They're conflicting, I feel.
I'm like, my responsibilities at the Radio Shack, while important, and I do care about them, are in fact getting in my way to my steps up in the Illuminati. And he talked about different people being at steps and stuff like that. So it's I feel like it's somebody who'd seen a lot of movies on this and was interested in it.
For sure. Seen movies, read books. It's all the classic, like, oh, Satanists drink blood, but they're also like wealthy and have luxuries and all of these things. And the reality is, you really wouldn't know who probably unless they just told you or wore a bunch of clothes indicating it. But like regular people are Satanists. The Church of Satan is actually a very nice church that has good morals and ethics. So it's why Satanists, like practicing Satanists today, get so pissed off about stuff like this because as we'll see, it created an entire country panicking over something that was all just fabricated.
No, you're right. And he also cribbed from, you know, Satanism developed more as a religion, more as a formal religion. But even in these early days, right, you know, before he even wrote the book, it was Wicca was just coming to the States. Yeah. We talked about in the season of The Witch that it really emerged like in the late 1960s. And there were some books, you know, very small handful of adherents in the U.S., but there were some books available and he cribbed stuff from that. So now you're wrongfully maligning what is a perfectly normal religion that's just, you know, fringe, different from what you were raised on. But now the first entree that a lot of people have to what are actually just Wicca practices are through this lens of look at what these horrible devil worshipers eat in their fingers and also doing this normal Wicca thing. And now it's put together and it's like, man, you're doing damage to people who are just trying to fucking worship like out in the woods, trying to get close to nature, man.
Trying to dance under the moonlight naked.
The fuck out of here.
College records, photographs, and testimony from peers placed Warnke in a very different environment and reality. College classmates later told investigating journalists that Warnke had been quiet, socially awkward, and conservative. Photos show Warnke as clean-shaven, normally dressed, and standing along fellow members of Campus Crusade for Christ. Academic records proved Warnke was a full-time student, not running a 1,500-person coven. And Charles Manson was incarcerated during the supposed meeting with Warnke.
This was on the very edge of what do we joke around in Full Moon Energy of like you could be anybody for 6 weeks or 6 months back in the 1800s. Like the 1960s, late 60s, early 70s was like, I think the last time you could really do like by the 80s, there were more exposés, but he got right in under the wire of like people can't fact check it. I'm just going to tell them I was friends with Charlie Manson.
Yeah. And you're like, but he was in prison already by that time.
Like when you're a Satanist, you can actually do like this virtual hologram visit.
Yeah.
It's like
it's all telepathy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All
it's right. Zoom meetings before they were Zoom. I'm so, zooming in my mind.
Zoom to my consciousness, baby. He was taking a lot of speed is what he said. So maybe he did Zoom to see Charles Manson.
Oh, he was zooming.
He was zooming.
Military records confirm that in June of 1966, Warnke enlisted in the United States Navy as a hospital corpsman. He was deployed to Vietnam, where he was wounded and awarded a Purple Heart. Over the years, Warnke would describe two major combat wounds. Then later, the number sometimes increased to five. He wrote that while he was in the service, his occult group continued sending him letters, trying to get him to return. Ultimately, he was able to give his life to Christ and leave Satanism behind.
Yeah, he said in the service that the Satanist sent a black cat, which he said was clearly a demon in disguise, to monitor.
To Vietnam?
I guess so. And also around his, like, where his girlfriend, fiance was staying in California, around the house and stuff, to monitor, to be, like, a pressure. He also said that she slipped in a workout class and sprained her ankle, and he was like, clearly the Satanist cursed her. Because
the girlfriend did?
Yeah, his girlfriend.
Cat.
No, the cat, but his girlfriend slipped and hurt her ankle. And he was like, do you see how the curses can happen?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think. Maybe.
It's an interesting insight, though, into what else was he feeding her? You know, like it's becomes a slippery slope of like, well, now I'm using this fake thing to control someone else or, you know, scare them into thinking that these things are happening to them because of reasons that aren't real at all. All I can think about is a black cat trotting through the jungles of Vietnam up to Mike Warnke to deliver a message. Like,
the Satanists have, they have found me. Well, and when he was in Vietnam, Sue, which was his high school girlfriend, was in Southern California and going to church at the time that was like a conservative church, pretty conservative. And it had this hotline. So if you were struggling with, you know, drugs, whatever, you could call this hotline. And when he got back from Vietnam, his wife later said, you know, he was kind of struggling and maybe drinking a little bit. And he said he called the hotline and then got involved with the church that operated the hotline sort of after it. And I think once you have two people that believe the same things, you're just vibing each other up and like,
oh, yeah,
I really was. Do you remember whenever I was with all those Satanists in college? And she's like, I mean, what? What were you doing? He was like, yeah, anytime I said I was at the hamburger job, I wasn't.
I was in the cemetery. While still technically enlisted in the Navy, Warnke began giving informal Christian talks at churches and meetings connected to Southern California evangelist Morris Cerullo, presenting himself as a recent convert with a dramatic past. Cerullo was a prominent Pentecostal evangelist, actively looking for material addressing youth culture, drugs, and the occult. The pastor began promoting Warnke as someone with firsthand experience of Satanism and used him on the speaking circuit.
They didn't just use him. Mike would start telling people this in these church meetings, you know, and they're like, does anyone have an experience with sin? And he raises his hand and was like, well, I was a former Satanist. And they're like, you were just a Satanist? He was like, no, I was a high priest. They're like, what? So they're asking him. So then Morris Cerullo created what he called the Witchmobile, which was a full mobile home trailer that went around displaying these quote unquote occult artifacts to travel around and warn people away from the occult towards Christianity. They described it in marketing material as a fully equipped educational anti-cult mobile unit. And wow. Mike was interviewed at the time, like the LA Times interviewed him, and he's like, I was part of a witchcraft group called the Centaurs. Now,
S-I-N, it has to be S-I-N.
No, it should be weak ass. It's regular what? Centaurs. Wasted opportunity, Mike.
Why would you call yourself the Centaurs then?
Stupid.
I mean, Centaur is already a thing, and you're not that, but it's funny if it's S-I-N-tar.
Man, he should have leaned into that, but I think
God, Mike.
Idiot. You're not even good at marketing.
Comedian. This is why you're a failed comedian. You can't even come up with a good pun.
Come on, man. It was right there. But he never mentioned the Centaurs again after these initial Witchmobile interviews. But yeah, he got paid by Cerullo's church to fill the mobile with something, Witchmobile, and he said he got a human skull, like books on spirits, a Ouija board, knives, like junk pieces, bric-a-brac, voodoo oil, you know, stuff like that.
I've got all these in my house right now. Well, there, not the skull.
We could make a Witchmobile right now. But at one conference, I mean, everybody wanted to go in it, of course, because it has these artifacts. But essentially, at the end of the day, like, they just gave it to Mike. But he was, I think, a evangelical pastor sees an opportunity and has access to an RV and puts the two together.
That's how magic's made, baby. I don't think the evangelical priest was really doing a lot of fact checking, even if he could. I think he was happy to have found someone that was calling themselves a high-ranking satanic priest to amp up his show even more, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those where we have something that no one else has in the Witchmobile.
And everyone wants to, I mean, I'm going to the Witchmobile. You're going. Everybody wants to see what's in the Witchmobile. Even if, like, you're scared of it, you're intrigued by it, you're practicing with it, everyone wants to see what's going on in there, and you can just roll it right up to wherever.
It's on wheels and it travels. One of the church members, however, later said, the Witchmobile always seemed amateurish to me, even by 1971 standards.
Damn.
But it is. I mean, it's kind of just this collection of junk that because it's nothing more than a guy going, no, it's true. But because I said it was true. Like, that's the only evidence. And Cerullo would go, like, Warnke was called to join the Church of Satan in January of 1966. The Church of Satan was founded in, like, April 1966. So it's, like, stuff like that where they would say these things and that, not to be nitty, but, like, sort of the truth, you kind of have to be nitty, that people were just like, yeah, whatever. I'll buy a ticket. I'll go in.
Yeah. They don't care. And all I can hear is Jason Cerullo every time we talk about him.
Absolutely. He's not as cool as Jason Derulo, but he did announce himself that way when he opened the Witchmobile. He would go, Pastor Cerullo. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Cirullo already had plans for a book on Satanism and assigned the writing task to David Balsiger, a freelance writer who specialized in evangelical nonfiction. Wernke provided the core narrative material, while Balsiger shaped it into a publishable manuscript. During this time, Wernke sought and received an early discharge from the Navy in early 1972, citing his desire to enter full-time ministry work. Following his discharge, Wernke married his high school classmate, Sue Studer. He later claimed their marriage saved his life from Satanism.
Well, he got out of the military because Cirullo knew a congressperson, and they told the military that he was a conscientious objector. So in my opinion, that's lying to get out of the military, but it is, and using connections. But Balsiger was like, the first draft was a disaster. He said Mike read it and was
shocker.
Like, this is wrong. You've got everything out of order. So that he said they sat down at Mike's house and rewrote the thing in 3 months. And imagine you're just like with Mike Wernke, and he's like, yeah, that's the ticket. And then we went to Radio Shack. And you're like, okay, yeah, okay. This is what Morris wanted. So yeah, okay.
Spending that much time alone with him in a small room would change you on a molecular level, I think.
Absolutely. If only by just osmosis alone.
Yes.
Oh, man. But Sue, you know, she was waiting for him after he got back from Vietnam. And he says in the book, like, it's dedicated to her, among other people that helped him get out of Satanism, and that, like, she was his ticket out and they were so in love. And we'll see how long that lasts.
Despite the factual inconsistencies and fabrications, the resulting book, The Satan Seller, landed powerfully when it was published in 1972, becoming a religious bestseller within months. Wernke was quickly exalted as an insider who had escaped the occult. His speaking schedule rapidly expanded, and the book went on to sell over 3 million copies. Audiences were riveted by the details of rituals and connections to the Illuminati, the highest levels of world power and domination. Later, investigative journalists John Trott and Michael Hertenstein concluded,
"The Illuminati myth was the booster rocket propelling Wernke's story." I would agree with that.
People love an Illuminati story.
And they love to think that it's not only bigger than what he's describing. You know, he's like, I met these at this college in California. Well, if you're in Idaho, you might not be as afraid. But if he's like, and they're connected to a huge network and they're in your very neighborhood, they're everywhere. So
you don't know who your neighbors are.
So for a pastor who's trying to use Mike's words to make his flock nervous and listen to him, or if you're, you know, parents, any of that stuff, it became such a nebulous nebulous villain that it's like it's got its tentacles in everything and you could never know. So I think him, it probably would have been pretty popular, but him adding on that like brotherhood element that was familiar to people who had watched horror films in the 1960s and, you know, read previous fictional stuff about this, were like, it's just like they said in the movies.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's because Mike also watched those movies and just made all this up. But everybody wants to be a fly on the wall at one of these ritual, you know, inner circle meetings. I guess everybody wants to, or am I just... Oh, I feel like everyone that listens to this show wants to, at least.
At least the Sinisterhood, everyone. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so... You know, you might not want to go, but to have like all the knowledge, the morbid curiosity, I mean, people are still interested in that. So this, if you're like, this is the first time anyone has given us like a firsthand account of what has really gone down in these rituals, I'm lining up to buy one of those 3 million copies.
No joke. I mean, whenever I first saw the book, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I want to know the behind the scenes. And then this is like whenever I bought those tarot cards and I found out they were made by the guy from Wild Wild Country. But in this case, I Googled it first and then was like, we should do an episode on this.
Yeah.
Instead of Heather being like, I read this book, you guys, about the Illuminati. It was crazy. We're I know like, everything now.
Heather, That was written a long time ago.
Oh, girl, did you look at his Wikipedia page? Yeah, I fucking checked his Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I have all his comedy CDs now.
Yeah, and his 8 tracks, too.
Throughout the early 1970s, Warnke toured widely as an evangelist, peddling his stories of being an ex-satanic priest. But his personal life soon diverged sharply from his public testimony. In 1974, while attending Trinity Bible College in Tulsa, Warnke began an affair with a fellow student, Carolyn Alberti. Faculty members and pastors attempted to intervene. Nevertheless, in December of 1975, Warnke divorced Sue. Within a few months, he married Carolyn.
And it wasn't even like, well, we fell in love and we told each other we loved each other. And it's like, y'all were fucking, like, while you were married, yeah. Everybody around them knew. His colleagues, that, you know, the other people, like they said, that were in their ministry or professors at the college would take him aside and kind of say, hey, you know, first of all, Carolyn had a little bit of a rough background and had she claimed she never participated in sex work. She had been arrested at a place known for sex work, but said that she was in there selling stolen clothing, that she wasn't actually doing sex work. Other people had said she did. It's whatever. Regardless, she had this background. And I wonder if he targeted that of yeah. a person who is like a former whatever, reformed whatever, thinking that means they'll still do it. And at one point when their relationship turned sexual, they said before that they were like sending messages to each other and, you know, by that I mean like quite literally like written notes to each other and just spending time and giggling and being next flirting. To each other, flirting. Well, he rented this cabin to go do Bible study and told her to go because she was staying with some other adults at the time, so she didn't have privacy. And on the drive there, he's like, what are your favorite type of cigarettes? And she told him, and he pulled over at a gas station, went in, got 2 packs of those cigarettes, 2 bottles of wine, and some peanut butter cookies. And
hell yeah.
Because a man knows how to give a lady a good time. And then gets back in the car and is like, let's go to the cabin and smash. And they did. And then people obviously noticed that they were fucking. His wife called Carolyn a cold-hearted temptress. But Carolyn said essentially, like, at any point, if Mike was confronted, he could just hustle his way out. She said he always knew how to talk his way out, except one of his fellow ministry members stopped him and said, hey, you know, this is ungodly what you're doing with Carolyn. You need to stop. And he said, it's none of your business. And that guy's wife then confronted him and said, you know, we really want to emphasize this is ungodly. And he said, listen, it's not Carolyn or Sue that I love. I'm actually in love with you. Mm. And then he grabs her. And meanwhile, this woman is like, no, I'm married and yeah. I'm not into mullets. Please fucking back off. And so to me, it was like, not just, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't be having this affair, or yeah, I'm just so in love. It was like, well, I'm stuck in this situation where I've been confronted. What should I do? Oh, I should lie and tell this woman that I'm in love with her. It's mm-hmm. like his choice is to lie.
Yeah. Every time. Yeah.
The out is to lie. Lie to his wife. She was a temptress. She tried, you know, she seduced me. Meanwhile, everybody was like, no, he was following Carolyn around. Like,
yeah. And the lying started in childhood, almost like yep. a defense mechanism. Like when you're backed into a corner or you're like worried that you're going to get in trouble or somebody's not going to like you. It's like you just have to lie. Keep mm-hmm. lying until you hit on whatever like is their thing, you know? Like, yeah. I mean, if you're throwing spaghetti and he's like, maybe this lady just wants to be wanted by someone and I'll try that. And then she could have said, oh, really? And mm-hmm. then it would have worked. But she saw that mullet and was like, business in the front, business in the back for me. Sir. Thank you, sir. Please leave.
No, thank you. But you're right. And I mean, I think he even lied to get into Carolyn's pants in the first place. He goes, oh, I know I saw you at some of those parties I was at in California, those Satanist parties, because I know you used to party too. And she was like, I mean, I went to parties, but like, what are you talking about? But again, just kind of using the mm-hmm. nebulousness of what can you and can't you prove. But he did tell her in Genesis, there's a verse that talks about gods and of angels of God visiting the daughters of men and creating a race of giants. And you and I were born out of that unique race and we're giants. You and I are giants with special powers.
Wow. And if you've had a rough background and now you're under this man's thumb, I mean, that's how coercive control starts. That's how a cult starts.
You have a best-selling author telling you, I'm chosen and you're chosen just like me. Mm-hmm. But to her credit, Carolyn's like, ease up on the Satanism stuff and focus on the funny, man.
Yeah. Focus on those. Where'd you get those cookies? Where'd those cookies go?
Let me go back to those peanut butter cookies. Hang on a minute.
During this time, he continued to speak publicly about triumph over darkness and the spiritual dangers of the occult. In the Satan Cellar, he had presented Sue as the loving partner he returned to after abandoning Satanism. But in reality, the marriage ended less than 3 years after the book's publication due to his infidelity. The Satan Cellar's influence extended far beyond book sales and speaking engagements. The default template for how evangelicals eventually understood Satanism was based almost entirely on Warkey's description of ritual sex, drug trafficking, blood rituals, hierarchical covens, and recruitment on college campuses. At the time, evangelical Christianity was actively searching for ways to explain the social upheavals of the late 1960s. Drug use, the counterculture, sexual liberation, anti-war movements, and declining trust in traditional authority. Warnke's book offered a compelling narrative that tied these anxieties together into a single moral explanation: Satanism.
Fucking church lady style. Satan?
Satan? Could it be Satan? Dana Carvey, such iconic characters. Warnke's book frames Satanism as an organized, criminal, conspiratorial, underground, actively recruiting young people, not just a fringe belief or symbolic rebellion. Because Warnke presented himself as a former high priest with insider knowledge, the book was received as eyewitness reporting and taken as gospel. Its success established Warnke as an authority figure whose testimony was treated as factual. Throughout his success, no one knew that his testimony was based on fabrications and impossible lies.
And it's interesting to kind of consider the political underlying, which is the Nixon administration is kind of looking for this concrete explanation of like things like Charles Manson or particularly the huge backlash to the Vietnam War. And you have a person who's like they said, saying he's actually boots on the ground and was doing it and also was a, you know, a veteran. But the evangelical establishment that is putting on these like Congress on the Holy Spirit or Congress on World Evangelization, like they have been putting on these large conferences in the 70s, are looking for a way to merge this like pro-America, pro-Vietnam War with religion. And when you set up anybody who has anything to do with counterculture, non-clean-cut look, non-conformist to support this unjust war, then they get lumped in with their Satanists. And that explains it. And that also explains why, insert whatever else, they do anything else here that you don't agree with, whether they're queer in some way or whether they are mixing races, you know, at that point in the late 1960s, early 70s, that wasn't, you know, widely accepted. So it's fascinating to watch like Nixon kind of trying to embrace this. Meanwhile, he's literally Watergating people and being a liar in the background. So it's, I feel like Warnke was a tarp over this like machine underneath it where it was like, well, really we can just cram anything we want under there and just say it was the devil. And then everybody can't question it. Cause you know, the devil's the worst thing.
Yeah, no, truly. It was a great way to other people and anybody that didn't fall under the, I mean, as still today, the white, cis, heteronormative person that you were lumped into this category of like, oh, well, they're probably Satanists. And everybody was so under the thumb of like Christianity and this panic that like, to be considered a Satanist was like the worst thing anybody could be called. And it conjured up all these images of animal sacrifices, you know, scary people wearing all black. So imagine all the people that like were closeted for whatever it was, sexuality, anything at this time, because they knew that they could easily just be lumped into this, like any kind of oppressed or targeted group.
It was a catch-all to punish you for stepping out of line, a tool of conformity.
For sure.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
By the mid to late 1970s, Warnke had entered the Christian comedy circuit. His first comedy album gained unexpected popularity on Christian radio, and he quickly established himself as one of the leading Christian comedians of the decade. His albums and live performances blended humor with testimony, which made his occult claims more accessible and less likely to be questioned. Audiences encountered warnings about Satanism in a relaxed, entertaining context, reinforcing the ideas without inviting critical scrutiny.
And you're like, how do you become on the Christian comedy circuit? But he got signed by a promoter that promoted Christian bands. And later when they were asked, like, did you worry that this was like all made up? They were like, well, the thing was, is we just needed people with platforms, and he seemed to have a pretty big one with this book, and we didn't really worry about the truth of it. We just wanted to sell tickets to stuff, and that is how you end up with God's one and only Christian of comedy, Mike Warnke, ladies and gentlemen.
So I got to play some TikToks here.
Okay. I was like, I listened to Hey Doc, which was his, I think, his first comedy special. And then another one called Do You Hear Me from the 80s.
Do you hear me calling? Yes. Mike Warnke Hey Doc was about his time in the war.
Yeah.
This one is from, well, the account is Bootleg Yukon Cornelius.
There we go.
But this is the little clip, and he's wearing, oh man, a pink long sleeve button down tucked into what appears to be black jeans.
I believe this is from Do You Hear Me? Yes. This outfit is so good.
The mullet is astounding.
Just like glorious.
Flowing like a river. Glasses, you'll hear he's got a certain way of speaking, but just how quickly this goes from just what I believe is stolen material, first of all. I'm pretty sure I've heard every single one of these jokes in Gallagher or George Carlin or somebody. But then it just is like, boop, and now we're talking about something wild. And if this crowd is sold out, I mean, this is like in
it's a huge crowd,
a large auditorium, hundreds of people, if not like 1,000, who are just dying laughing. But I was also dying laughing just at how insane it is. But here you go.
Drive on parkways and park on driveways.
Old joke. Very old.
What is daylight savings time? And if we're saving so much of it, who's got it all?
They're just one-liners.
I think these are like old Carlin stuff.
How do you know when yogurt's gone bad?
So it cuts away after how do you know when yogurt's gone bad? The joke is because it's already soured milk. Yeah. All of these are just one-liners. It's not even like written material he's done. And then this comes about.
Like lying, for example. People think that's a normal thing to do. Go out to the airport. Go out to the airport. Get on an airplane and go somewhere. Do you realize what you're doing? You're getting in a hollow metal tube with wings on it under the command of a complete stranger.
He's not
you're letting
wrong.
This guy take you to 35,000 feet and travel in excess of 400 miles an hour.
That's people are saying, dying laughing.
Strap me to this bullet and send me home.
He goes into the whole bit about seatbelts. He's like, seatbelts are crazy. Because then if you're in a plane crash, you're like, I'm glad I'm strapped into this wreckage and everybody's laughing and stuff. And then he'll switch very quickly, like you said, of like, oh, well, you know, if you want to get a cheese sandwich, Christians are like, show it to me in the word of God. Show me. And he sets up this kind of Christian foil of yeah. like a disbelieving Christian foil that's like, I know some of y'all in the audience going, what did he bring me to? Why did I end up here? Well, and he's like preempting people questioning him and mocking yeah. people that might question him, which it is. You're right. It's all very funny and also 100% stolen from other comedians. I can't pinpoint who it is, but those are definitely old jokes.
But it really is a way to skirt any type of scrutiny. He set himself up because it's just him talking on a stage. It's not like a back and forth, mm-hmm. hopefully, unless you're getting heckled. Nobody seems to be heckling. Mm-mm. But he's not like taking questions. So no. He doesn't have to answer to anything. He is just sharing the story that he wants everyone to take as gospel, which I think we have some of that about to emerge.
Oh, no.
It's a dangerous and weird thing to do. I had a sex change operation 3 years ago when I got saved last night. I want you to tell me what to do with the rest of my life. You better have some Jesus on tap then. I'm talking about a little girl who was murdered last year, 1987, in the state of Louisiana, by having her sexual organs cut out while she was still alive.
None of this probably happened.
A lot of you think that when a Satanist kills, they do so because they want to spill blood. You've seen enough late night movies to think that. But if a Satanist or any other kind of occultist kills an animal or a human sacrifice, it's not to spill blood, it's to release the life force. Because when the life force is released and you've done the right incantations and rituals, you can absorb that force.
Mind the toes.
Say, and it yeah. makes you a stronger nice. Wizard warlock.
Wizard warlock.
Whatever. Gryffindor.
And the longer the death and more prolonged the death and the more agonizing the death, the more force is released. So they took this little girl and they killed her by cutting her sexual organs out while she was still alive. After she was dead, they cut her chest open, took out her heart, cut it up in little pieces, and took communion on it. And after she was dead, they cut down both sides of her head and down the back. They peeled the flesh away from the bone. They stole her skull to be used in satanic rituals, took her mutilated body, put her in a garbage sack, and threw her in the dump. And I am a winner.
What? And he I am from, a winner. And then we applaud?
He went from... Aren't airplanes crazy as a concept? Yeah. You ever wonder why we drive on a parkway and park on a driveway to yeah. like, they cut her vagina off? Yes. What are you talking about?
No, but whiplash, man.
But I think there's something to that whiplash, mm-hmm. like psychologically, because laughter is from surprise, right? He's surprising you in a different way to where now the response is like, you know, quiet and the inverse
there's
of laughter.
Some gasps, there's as definitely, one would assume.
Definitely gasp, but the idea that you're right, it does just take a complete left turn. You have reduced people's defenses because you've made them laugh and then turn to just go, information, source, trust me, bro.
Yeah.
But they don't think to question it because the whole idea of a comedian, and specifically him, he starts off, and I was like, he must have studied comedians because that's where he got a lot of his jokes that he stole. But he starts off at the beginning of Do You Hear Me, that special, being like, oh, I'm sure you think I look weird. He does all of his specials a little bit like, oh, I have long hair, I have earrings, I look weird. And picking on himself, which I think too subconsciously makes us go, oh, he's telling me the truth, right? Like I see that too. He does look like a weirdo. I was thinking that. He is right. So this, and then he gets you with like, aren't airplanes weird? We're like, they are weird. Yeah. And isn't it? He did a whole bit right after the airplane thing about like, families are weird. He's like, you know, you've had a bad day. Your wife's had a bad day when you come home and the demon took over and she's like, get your children. And, you know, making
so
those kind of
easing
like,
into it with yes. little jokes like that before he's uh-huh. just like, boom.
By the way, there could be a real demon and it might step on you if you get the rituals yeah. wrong. But yeah, it's crazy to think that a person... Man, knowingly lies like that and so easily. It's creepy. It's creepy as fuck to hear him.
It is. It's you're watching a con man at work. And,
yeah.
And as much as we're laughing, like it is a honed skill. It's yeah. a craft to be able to do what he's doing. And mm-hmm. like now we can kind of like zoom out and see how he did it. But you're sitting in that audience. You're not breaking all of that down at the time. You know, you're just mm-hmm. know how you feel. Like, I was laughing and I feel like I can trust him. So, I mean, this is probably true also, right? And everyone there was told it's like a Christian comedy type mm-hmm. of thing. So they're already
primed
of that mindset. Yeah. And they're Christians going to a thing where they all like have like beliefs and stuff. So out of nowhere, you just start getting some little girls getting her organs harvested in the most heinous way possible. And has that ever happened? I'm sure. But mm-hmm. did he see it happen, or is this exact story that he's talking about happen? No, he's just making shit up.
And that's the dangerous thing, is that he did, man. And people listened to him because nobody asked the Nancy McKinney question that we should all ask always when anyone tells me something. Says who? Says who?
Says who?
Like, what are you making up? Like, and
cite
nobody
your sources, Mike. Cite your fucking, we want receipts.
Fucking cite your sources. But yeah, you can just hear him tell it with like gleefully and so naturally that to me it's disturbing, because it is indicative of a person who can easily like lie as just as easy as they can breathe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's come second nature to him since he was a kid. And I think people like that, I don't even know if they realize it's just like them, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not even switching back and forth from lying to not lying. That's just them. They're kind of always selling you something. They're always, you never know what you can believe.
Yeah. Multiple people called him pathological, or were like, you couldn't get a straight thing out of it. You know, people that eventually, that were not mere audience members and had familiarity through that, which I think that was another way for him to get a lot of, be successful, is that like he only let certain people know him well enough to know that he was full of shit.
Yeah.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
During this period, Warnke was frequently cited alongside other self-described ex-Satanists, helping to normalize the idea that former occult insiders were reliable experts. His claims fed directly into a growing genre of evangelical literature and programming about spiritual warfare, demonic influence, and hidden satanic threats. In 1979, Warnke published another autobiography, Hitchhiking on Hope Street. Meanwhile, his marriage to Carolyn was deteriorating. Accounts gathered by investigators and acquaintances described significant conflict in the home. Carolyn would later say that the break came through a mix of personal incompatibility and Warnke's ongoing relationship with another woman, Rose Hall, whom he had met during a ministry trip.
Fucking sucking and yucking.
Dude, he can't keep it in his pants. And
no,
that's
even with that
thing.
Belt buckle.
Dude, I know. You'd think, how could you get anything out of those pants with that belt buckle? But this is kind of like another example of he is in no way practicing what he's preaching. Mm-mm, because mm-mm. I'm pretty sure one of the Ten Commandments is you shouldn't cheat on people.
Constantly.
And he's just leaving all of his wives for other people he's met, other women he's met along the way, you know? And then just mm-hmm. like, this is his pattern. And somehow it's okay if I do it. But
yeah,
No one else should do that. Don't listen. Just do as I say, not as I do.
It is wild for somebody to have been getting up on as many stages as he had and been like, I'm a Christian. I may not look like it, but that's okay, because Christians sometimes want all their sheep shorn the same way. And you can be a Christian and you can love the Lord even if your hair is long. And even if you are cheating on your wife and every wife you've ever had, put your dick in whatever you want. Do whatever you want. It's like he's speaking truth up into a point of, yes, he's up there saying like, because Jesus Christ died on the cross to save me and he didn't need your permission to do it, and he can do it. And he launches into this certain very familiar preacher voice.
Evangelical preacher voice, yeah.
Absolutely obscures the fact that he was cheating on Sue with Carolyn and with another lady. So he was also kind of like cheating on his side piece anyway. And then he marries one side piece and then cheats on her too. It's like, Jesus Christ, man.
Dude, yeah. And also, ladies, what are you doing?
Money is a hell of a drug, is all I can say.
And so is manipulation. I mean, power. He's manipulating complete audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine one-on-one.
God, yeah. If you're in a one-on-one relationship
with him, the bullshit that he's constantly feeding you.
Mm-hmm. Anything to lure you in, whether it's your past or what you could be in the future, what he sees in you, or yeah, we are both descended from giants.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also
very insidious, because when word does get out that, oh, he's cheating on his wife and he's left someone else, all these people that have come to think of him in high regard are now like, well, Mike cheated on his wife and he's an ex-Satanist and has turned his life to the Lord. So it must not be that bad if I do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also I think he preys on a group of people who one of their core tenets is forgiveness. So even if you cheat on your wife, you know, you cheat on Sue to get with Carolyn. Well, I sinned, but Carolyn and I are married now, and now we're happy, and I just need to be forgiven. Well, you just have to wait a requisite number of years to do it again, because you know everybody around you is going to forgive you anyway. Yeah. So it's when a wolf gets into the hen house, truly.
In 1980, Warnke divorced Carolyn and married Rose on January 2nd. Rose brought three children from previous marriages, and together she and Mike formed a ministry partnership that became central to Warnke's public identity throughout the 1980s. They traveled together, appeared in promotional photographs together, co-performed routines, and jointly presented a family-centered image that resonated with Christian audiences.
Not one person went, and how'd you guys get together?
It's giving righteous gemstones. Oh, man. I mean, he's
not quite as rich, but yeah.
Not nearly as rich, but just the constant changing of whatever is going to resonate most with the audience.
Verbatim, that's what the Christian promoter guy said, of just like, we were just looking for whatever we thought they wanted to hear. And yeah. Like in the 80s, it was Satanism. Like, he sort of started it, but man, by the early mid 80s, people were lapping this shit up.
Oh, yeah. During the early and mid-1980s, Warnke's career reached its commercial apex. His comedy albums sold widely. His live performances attracted thousands. He appeared on Christian television programs, radio broadcasts, and special events. Throughout this period, Warnke also helped fuel the broader satanic panic. He functioned as an expert source on satanic ritual abuse and occult crime throughout Christian radio, television, and at conferences. He was featured on mainstream secular programs like ABC's 2020, where his testimony was presented largely unchallenged. Law enforcement seminars, pastoral training events, and counseling workshops sometimes drew on narratives consistent with Warnke's descriptions of organized covens, ritual abuse, and generational satanic networks.
It's horrific, but in his book, he doesn't talk about children really at all. I mean, they were not mentioned. It was not a thing that it was just children ritual abuse. And he is rare in the memories of an ex-Satanist that he has one long, uninterrupted, full chronological memory of what happened to him. Like, maybe broken up a little bit by drugs, but in the 80s, it really became more popular, especially with the book Michelle Remembers, to have fragmented memories that maybe you start to get asked questions and say yes to them versus you are being the provider of those memories. And him being questioned as an expert at first, the all many police officers and law enforcement and stuff that were like, we heard that there's like Satanists everywhere and we need to know. You're an expert. You had a 15 person coven. Why don't you tell us about, we're hearing about this child sex abuse from these other people that have these memories that they came, that were made up in many cases out of whole cloth. What about it with kids and your Satanism? And at first he went, oh, well, you know, I really wasn't around for it, or I didn't really remember it. Well, then when it was became popular, he was like, oh man, American devil cults kill 50 to 60,000 children per year. That is twice the entire homicide rate of all people. And he's like making these outrageous claims, yeah. But his story fucking changed because that's what was popular. And when you're getting asked on 2020, if you go, no, first of all, now your lie is going to crumble because they're saying, you know, and now you have these two liars and eventually the liars just all start quoting each other. So books came out that quoted Mike. Well, then he would start quoting the books that quoted him that added to it. So it just became this big kind of like nasty hairball of made up shit.
And if you're not answering the questions the way that people want you to answer them, you're not getting asked back for those 2020 interviews.
Mm-hmm. And at these like massive conferences, and there was the founder of BAD, which is Bothered About Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, Tommy, are you a baddie? Tommy's a baddie.
Baddies are anti. They're anti D&Ders.
Oh, Tommy's an anti-baddie.
He's an anti-baddie. Yeah, but they believe that these fantasy role-playing games like D&D were this like way to get teens into the occult. And they would be at these conferences too. And between the bad, literally bad guy, and like Mike Warnke, people were going to jail. They were losing, losing custody of their kids. They were going on trial for horrific things. And meanwhile, it's like literally all made up and the cops just keep asking him. And can you imagine someone that just looks him in the face and goes, yeah, it's all true.
Like the McMartin preschool daycare case. I remember the Lifetime movie about that too, but a real trial that happened. And so many of the experts that interviewed these kids were just feeding them loaded questions. I mean, objection left and right of leading of like, well, you remember when the teacher took you underground into that lair where all the other, where your classmates were, right? And they all made you do XYZ. And they're like, uh-huh. But yeah. These are 5-year olds. Like, what are you talking about? You know? Mm-hmm. And that's, it's all made up, but these people were, I mean, ridiculed. They lost all their credibility. They went on trial. I can't remember if they were convicted. We need to do a whole episode on that case. It's fascinating, but it also is fascinating because of the power of suggestion and just straight up lies that people will believe when it comes to stuff so dark and morbid like this, that you're like, there's no way this could happen. But it did, and it happened right under our noses.
Mm-hmm. And again, that the it could be anywhere. The tentacles could be anywhere. This could be your child's daycare in the middle of Miami or whatever. You know, it's like you're a literally opposite side of the country, but you believe that it could be happening to you. And it's all of these supposed experts are full of fucking shit. They're just full of shit. It's fake.
No,
it's
they all fake. Made it up. They're all con men.
It's crazy. And people suffered horribly because of it.
I mean, and think of like the children that are in that trial being asked these questions, being asked before and after from detectives. And it's like, you're putting these kids through something that is going to traumatize them in some way. I mean, there's no way you can go through all this and not be. And someone at the end of the day knows it's all bullshit. Like, who, you know, I mean, Mike knows it's bullshit. Unless he's so delulu that he's become to believe his own lies. But you are like, I am going to let all this happen, even though I know that it's fake. For what? My own career? The greater good? Money? You know?
A lie becomes so big that you live inside it and you now have to do anything you can to defend it.
Yeah. Because it's if existential. You don't, your entire career and everything you've built your life on comes crumbling down.
He's like, but I've memorized a bunch of Gallagher and George Carlin bits that I was going to like lie and tell everyone I wrote myself. That's the other genius part, is to just do it in front of audiences that never listened to George Carlin. So then they think you made it all up.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think self-preservation is a hell of a thing. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
The Satan Cellar helps standardize specific motifs across descriptions of Satanism. The idea of, quote, high priest, large covens numbering in the hundreds or thousands, ritualized sexual violence, and deliberate recruitment of college students. These elements appear repeatedly in later satanic panic cases and memoirs, such as Michelle Remembers of 1980, despite a lack of corroborating evidence in any of them. Warnke's book functioned as an early narrative blueprint, shaping expectations about what Satanism, quote, looked like long before those claims were subjected to systematic investigation. By the mid-1980s, Warnke Ministries was thriving. Its leader was looked to as an expert on satanic abuse while filling packed churches for his sold-out comedy shows. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, the ministry's finances weren't all they appeared to be, and soon, the hard work of a pair of Christian journalists threatened to doom the entire Warnke empire. So what do we think?
I think it is a very precarious life to lead in a bubble of a lie. Like, your whole life could at any point be like Dwight Schrute on the exercise ball and journalists are Jim Halpert with a pair of scissors just staring at you like, we're about to go.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to tell us? And it's like, all this really happened. And I'll tell you what, you ever think about the words that have been banned from television? And you're like, okay, buddy, like, come on now. So I feel like by the 80s, you're like making so much money. You're on 2020. You have to realize that the floor is going to come out from under you, right? Like, is that great? Or are you deluded?
I mean, I think you bring up a good point of when you live in a lie like that, it becomes so crucial for you to keep up appearances because your everything is based on that. You're going to lose your lifestyle, the whatever wife you're on by now, all credibility,
money,
your comedy career. So even if you think that any second the other shoe could drop, I think you're trying so hard to prevent that you're just like, it seems exhausting to have to live such an intricate lie because the mental gymnastics you have to do to remember everything you've said at this point. I mean, in the beginning, you didn't really have to because nothing can be fact checked. But as the years go on and more technology and people just wise up to stuff, it doesn't get as easy to pull one over on people. And so your job becomes harder. And then when you get people involved that are like, hang on a minute, and somebody's finally like, I think we should question this guy, and you just start pulling at that thread, it does not take long for everything to unravel.
No, absolutely. We'll talk about it in part two, but you're exactly right, where throughout the years, multiple different journalists were always kind of like, I don't know about all that. Maybe we should look into that. But everybody was just believing him and appreciating him. But you're right. I think from the perspective of Warnke, you're like, okay, I have to manage the story because I told them this and I have to figure out a way to smooth it over if someone ever points out. But also Carolyn said he could hustle his way out of anything. So I think you also just develop that really good Teflon kind of attitude of like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. That was crazy. It was a long time ago. I did a lot of speed. I did a lot of drugs. It could have been anything. You know, and you have this persona that's maybe like reliable, but perhaps a little unreliable because I fought in Vietnam. I got hit 2 times. I mean, 5 times. I mean, who knows? And choosing to lie about things that A, people can't like argue with you on because they weren't in this satanic cult, because then he can be like, well, were you in a satanic cult too? But I think lying as much as he did for as long as he did, it also causes you, I think, to become willing to say even crazier things mm-hmm. to keep it up, because that's by the 80s, that's what they were wanting. And by they, I mean people that are paying you. People buying tickets want to confirm that what they saw in 2020 was true. They want to confirm that what they have this vibe that, you know, the kids with the shaved heads in my neighborhood are all crazy. And it's mm-hmm. like, they're actually Satanists. So it provides them with something. But I think he knew that he was always one expose away from living in the witchmobile again or something, you know, like yeah. having to like, or the people from his group coming out of the woodwork. But I think he always thought, oh, well, they're all separate. You know, it wasn't like he really was in this coven and the whole coven can come together and decide. It's like a random roommate that you've lost touch with, the guy you worked with at the hamburger stand that you've lost touch with, your old neighbor that you've lost touch with. And the thing about journalists is they've got telephones, and when they're being paid to get in touch with those people you lost touch with, then the members of the Centaurs are not so hard to find.
Yeah. And one would also ask, if you're as skeptical as I am, I'd be like, if these people are all so powerful, how are you just able to go on this whole tour circuit, blasting all of them and sharing all of their secrets? Why haven't they done some spell to cast you to the dark underworld yet?
That is, I think, the key to why people loved it and lapped it up like a kitten lapping up milk, a black cat demon lapping up milk, is because you know what protected him was the blood of Jesus Christ. And because he was saved by the Lord,
yep.
he's got so much powerful of the Holy Spirit around him. Then that's what you got to do, is that if you want to avoid these Satanists who don't exist, but if you don't want to get cursed and sprain your ankle in workout class or have a cat running around your house, which, like, I love when the cats come around my house, except for Buffy barks at them, then all you got to do is just dedicate your life in this exact way that we've told you. And in fact, we have a ministry called Warnke Ministries. And would you please send us some money, because mm-hmm. things are rough here at Warnke Ministries. And they were not rough. He was paying himself a yeah. shitload of money.
As yeah. evangelicals do.
Yeah.
I've never seen a poor one. That we've covered, yeah. at least.
Yeah, not once you start getting into the charging tickets to hear about how mm-hmm. the Lord changed them. I'm always like, I feel like the real Christians are the ones that listen to what Jesus said and then follow that. And at no point was he like, you should have a huge, giant display that you charge people $50 to see, and there are camels that walk through it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of more about like helping people and loving thy neighbor and whatnot. So
you haven't heard Jesus's type five?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
he just talks about, and then he smashes watermelons.
He's like,
he turns watermelon into wine right in front of the audience.
Hell yeah, it's sangria. Watermelon sangria. Yeah, if only. But yeah, people like Mike Warnke and everybody that enabled him, I feel like, really are what that insidious evangelical Christianity that mm-hmm. has gone. My friends who are Christians are always like, not like that though. Like, hang on a minute.
No, there's like, a oh, huge okay. difference in evangelical yeah. Christianity and, you know, traditional Christians. And then there's a huge difference between the type of Satanist Mike yeah. Warnke is claiming he spent time with and the actual Church of Satan.
There is some irony in that too, about there being like the real version in this, like, you know, larger than life fictional version that has taken over and ruining lives. But that's mm-hmm. all for part two.
Yes. Well, as we said up top, tune in tomorrow for
yes.
a extra bonus episode interview with Sarah Marshall, where you'll learn even more fascinating things about this whole case.
About this and the satanic panic in general. So hopefully it'll help fill in some gaps that we're not covering until we have time to cover some or all of the cases that she covers in The Devil You Know. That is a great resource mm-hmm. for an overview of the satanic panic and sort of how it developed and what the fuck were we all thinking back then.
Yeah. Well, if you like our free episodes like the one you just heard, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
And if you want to check out all the perks of a tier without paying, you can join for a week in a free trial. Join at any of the tiers and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around to an annual membership, you can also gift memberships, which is a great gift this season. You give them to give it to them in December. And if you do an annual membership, A, you get a month free, but you also give them something that they can enjoy weekly, daily, depends on how much time they have throughout the next 12 months. So
absolutely. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
And it has a ton of stuff with it, including
ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As. We have our monthly one coming up this Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's always such a fun time. We get to interact with everyone in the chat. You get to ask us questions. It's a hoot and a holler.
Every time. We never know what we're going to get asked, but we do know we're going to get asked to FMK something.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be like FMK, the Gingerbread Grinch. Man, yeah. Christmas tree cake, peppermint candy.
Okay. Well, we'll be thinking about that one, and we'll answer it for you on the Q&A.
I have mine, by the way.
Okay, good.
I just thought of it. Okay, good. Ooh, I love those Christmas tree cakes.
Well, we know
so
that.
So much so, I want to marry him. No, I'm effing the gingerbread man, and then I'm killing the peppermint.
You got to.
You also get quarterly live bonus content. We let you all vote on what you want to see for that. Weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
If you still need to do some Christmas shopping, head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch, like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. That's the best present you can give to us this holiday season. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just enter your email, you get immediate access to Sunday Scaries, the amazing chat, and a whole backlog of stuff just for signing up for free.
We can't wait. You can follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or maybe it's the holiday season and you need a pep talk, I hear you. Book a cameo now. Celebrating whatever you want to celebrate, we would love to celebrate with you with a custom video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's also perfect when you're not trying to go last minute shopping. And if you're looking to support a small business this holiday season, because that's literally what it is, us and our husbands. So yes. Thank you for everybody who subscribes to Patreon, who buys the merch for a friend or yourself, who subscribes to or who orders a cameo. All of that is so very appreciated this holiday season. And we hope it brings a smile to your face. We both have received cameos in the past, not from ourselves, but from people that we like and respect on our caliber, like Coach Bennett from my running app or Fiona the Hippo.
Yeah.
So put a smile on their face with a cameo at cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where are you at on the internet?
I am on the internet on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
You can find me online at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Katie O'Quinn,
Melissa Fellmore,
Jenna Crump,
and Amy Kayleen. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Mwahaha.